So the meditation that we have today is on hell. So we heard this morning on the recording, Mother Angelica talking about she's a wonderful, beautiful soul, you know. She has that like wit, that fire, that great love, you know, for her. And so everything that she said there is so true, because the church's mother, the church has to reveal, obviously, the doctrine of our Lord Jesus Christ for the good of all. And this particular meditation has been very, very beneficial for many saints, because in the sense that when we actually meditate on the hell, which is a reality, which is the doctrine of our Lord Jesus Christ, it's it leaves the soul in profound gratitude towards God. The fact that, you know, that if we were in the world, let's say, and if we were up to our neck in mortal sin, you know, if we died suddenly, you know, that's where we're going. Yeah. But the fact that, like, you know, the Lord has called us here to listen and to meditate on it, leaves a sound with a profound gratitude towards God for having such love and such mercy on us, even despite the fact that, you know, that's not of any great personal merits for our part, but, like, you know, because of his pure and infinite mercy. He has looked on each one of us, and he has thought of us, and he's brought us here. Now, somebody who has no faith came in here and, like, you know, realized that, like, you know, I was going to give you guys a meditation on hell. And if that person didn't have faith, you say, this priest is crazy. And these four people are just so innocent and so naive. And, you know, the priest is scaremongering these poor men, you know, into hell. So it's all... So unfortunately, like, you know, that mentality is widespread, you know. As I said to you yesterday, one of the great deceits of Satan is to convince people that he does not exist and that hell doesn't exist. And therefore, you can do what you like. You're free reign. And so it's not like that, because hell does exist. The enemy, Satan, is continually working on every soul that walks the earth. And the proof of his work is if you just simply, like, you know, switch on the radio or the television, if you listen to the news, what you hear is, like, news of corruption, of violence, of murder, you know, greed, perversion, all of that. All of these sins have their origin in the evil spirit, like Satan. And the mission of Satan, his reign, his kingdom, is to pervert the heart of all mankind into hating God and hating other people, and therefore dragging, we say, that soul to eternal condemnation in hell. Yeah. So we cannot be united with God unless we freely choose to love him. But we cannot love God if we sin gravely against him, against our neighbor, or against ourselves. He who does not love remains in death. Like, we, so we have, you know, sin leads us to death. On the contrary, grace leads us to life. It's a new lease of life, interior lease of life. And to die in mortal sin without repenting and accepting God's merciful love means remaining separated from him forever by our own free choice. This state of definitive self-exclusion from communion with God and the blessed is called hell. Now, this part comes from the Catechism. So what we can meditate on here is, like we say, in our own past lives, you know, part of the Ignatian, the meditation of St. Ignatius is to reflect on how we, in our past lives, how much we have offended God, not only by venial sin, but also mortal sin. And how many times, like, God in his infinite mercy has forgiven us through the sacrament of confession. and renewing us and cleansing us and giving us that push forward. Yeah. And, you know, if we were, you know, if we reflect, like, you know, and as I mentioned before, you know, if we were like, think of those moments in our life when we were living in sin, if we had died through an accident or something like very suddenly, well, we would, you know, that would mean like, you know, that we would be destined, you know, for hell. So Jesus often speaks of Gehenna, of the unquenchable fire, reserved for those who in the end of their lives refuse to believe and to be converted, where both soul and body can be lost. So the teaching of the church affirms the existence of hell and its eternity. Immediately after death, the souls of those who die in a state of mortal sin descend into hell, where they suffer the punishments of hell, eternal fire. The chief punishment of hell is eternal separation from God, in whom alone man can possess the life and happiness for which he was created and for which he belongs. In sacred scripture, we have the phrase from Jesus when he says, "Enter by the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is easy that leads to destruction and perdition, and those who enter by it are many. For the gate is narrow and the way is hard that leads to life, and those who find it are few." So there's a lot of truth in that. Find very often, like, you know, there's so many people, so many young people who are just like deceived by the deceits of Satan, like about their future. They have a false image of reality. They think that to be happy, one has to be very wealthy, and also to pursuit of life of disorder. A disordered life, pleasure, perversion, corruption, greed, laziness. And as a result, they become slaves. Because, you know, when we talk about sin, the objective that Satan has is to enslave humanity by sin. Because when one commits mortal sin, they are enslaved. So, I mean, when you think of slavery, I mean, you think of, like, you know, you have somebody who is the owner of those slaves. So Satan becomes, like, you know, say, almost like, we say, the owner or the one who's in charge of those souls. They can't escape unless those souls freely decide to confess. We have to remember also, like, you know, that Jesus moves mountains and the whole of earth in order to, you know, to convert a soul. So you can imagine, like, you know, any type of souls who have, like, you know, lost their way in life. They have lived lives really very, very far from God. They have offended not only God, but like many other people. They are on the brink of hell. You know, Jesus desires the salvation of that soul. And I have witnessed as a priest in my own ministry how Jesus has, you know, say, rescued souls. Thanks be to God, I'm delighted to say, through me as a priest in the sacrament of confession, to souls who are really very, very far from God. There was one story I remember with a young, in Spain, a young man. He was Ecuadorian, because I was a chaplain for a hospital, and I used to go around, we say, on giving communion to the sick, those who requested communion. And also we had some of our sisters working in the hospital as well, and they would actually visit, you know, the sick people, and they'd start talking to them and see how they were. And like they would say, like, well, do you realize, you know, that there's a chaplain here, there's a priest, if you'd like, you know, he can come and, you know, confess you and so on. So obviously you'd have a lot like, you know, that just wouldn't want that because they just no longer believe. But, you know, you would have other people who would want that because and then you'd have others, you know, that, you know, would say like, you know, they, even though they're not practicing, you know, they want, you know, that, that assistance of the priest. So I remember one particular man, he wasn't really elderly. He's, you know, he's a young man, I guess in his late 30s. He had cancer, terminal cancer. He was all hooked up with like, you know, tubes up his nose and things like that. And very, very sick. And I went to his bed. He wanted a confession. And, you know, I confessed his sins. His sins, the poor man had like, you know, it was so far from God. So many, you know, just so many women in his life, such a bad life, you know. And the funny thing that happens is like, you know, when a sickness occurs, the first thing we think of, like, you know, it's how awful, you know, it's terrible, it's a disaster. But, you know, the Lord has another way of operating and working. And how the Lord works is that when, you know, somebody has an illness that is a terminal illness that makes somebody suffer and that, like, you know, the body eventually deteriorates to such an extent that, you know, eventually that person dies, that places the person in a situation where they have to reflect on life and what they've done. And it's a unique opportunity for the Lord to, we say, work. You say, when they're lying there on the hospital bed, in order to think about their life, and, you know, how they've offended God, and, you know, to ask forgiveness. So this particular case of this young man, I was able to, again, help him to make a very good confession, going down through all the commandments. He was repentant for his sins, and then I gave him the absolution. So I, you know, that's a soul that has, like, you know, escaped from hell, you know. And it's probably, that sickness has been probably the best blessing that he ever got in his life. You know, because if you can imagine, like, if he was, like, say, out working, let's say, on a building site, and, or if he had, like, you know, died suddenly, let's say, working or in a car accident, you know, he wouldn't have repented for his sins. So when we, like, you know, when we hear about sicknesses, illnesses, or car accidents where people are really bashed up and, you know, they're in hospital, they're suffering, you know, we have to say, we always have to think of it in a supernatural light, through the eyes of faith. God has wanted this in some way. We may not understand it in some way, but, you know, when we have faith, we can understand things much better. Now, the case of this young man is not the only case. There are many other cases that I could, you know, go on to talk about. There's one other case that I heard of. It's not actually, I wasn't actually present in the case, but where there was this elderly man. He was like 90. He was lived a very bad life. His son-in-law used to visit him every day in the hospital. So this man had cancer. He was, like, you know, just basically deteriorating. So the son-in-law would come there and the hospital bed, and, you know, there'd be very little conversation because the poor man was sick, and, you know. But a doctor to him, you know, told this particular story to one of our, one of our priests. And basically, he was there in his bed for a long time. So the same pattern would happen every day. You would have this visitor coming in, the son-in-law coming in by his bed, staying a few hours and then leaving. And then one day, you know, the sick man said to the his son-in-law, he says, whatever his name was, John, he says, I'm going to die. Can you bring me a priest? And so he immediately left the son-in-law, and he got a priest. The priest came back, he confessed that man, And one day or 2 days later, that man died, that the sick man died. So we can see here, it actually turned out that this man was actually living a very bad life, because the son-in-law actually didn't get on with his with this man, because he's not, you know, he, but he was actually visiting every day because of his wife. Yes. And so, you know, because, so he just kind of basically completed his duty, so to speak, and because of his wife. So there are like so many different stories there. I mean, I have had a lot of experience of as a priest being called to assist at the bed of people who are dying, you know, people who are young, every age, every walk of life, people who are unconscious. And for me, it has been an immense grace of God to assist people at that moment, to pray the divine mercy, to implore for their souls. Because, you know, in a few moments, the physical body shuts down, but the soul has to go before God. So to implore God's mercy and God's grace for that person is a wonderful privilege. So then, since we know neither the day nor the hour, we should follow the advice of the Lord and watch constantly, so that when the single course of our earthly life is completed, we may merit to enter with him into the marriage feast and be numbered among the blessed, and not like the wicked and slothful servants, be ordered to depart into the eternal fire, into the outer darkness, where men will weep and gash their teeth. God predestines no one to go to hell. For this, a willful turning away from God, like mortal sin, is necessary, and persistence in it until the end. So Saint Faustina, like many other saints, she was taken to hell to see what hell was like. She obviously had it was a huge and immense suffering for her. But like Saint Teresa of Avila, Saint John Bosco, Saint Padre Pio, there are several others, you know, that were taken to hell just to see, what hell was like, and in order to describe it. So she talks about, like we say, the different, the seven sufferings of hell. She says, "Today I was led by an angel to the chasms of hell. It is a place of great torture. How awesomely large and extensive it is. The kind of tortures I saw were the following. The first torture that constitutes hell is the loss of God. And the second is perpetual remorse of conscience. The third is that one's condition will never change. The fourth is the fire that will penetrate the soul without destroying it, a terrible suffering, since it is purely spiritual fire lit by God's anger. The fifth torture is continual darkness and a terrible suffocating smell. And despite the darkness, the devils and the souls of the damned see each other and all the evil, both of others and their own. The sixth torture is the constant company of Satan. The seventh torture is a horrible despair, hatred of God, vile words, curses, and blasphemies. She also says the exact form of this suffering can be different for each person. Each soul undergoes terrible and indescribable sufferings related to the manner in which it has sinned. There are caverns and pits of torture where one form of agony differs from another. Finally, she adds one important qualification. But I notice one thing, that most of the souls, there are those who disbelieved that there is a hell. When I came to, I could hardly recover from the fright, how terribly souls suffer there. So that's the experience of Saint Faustina. It's very kind of similar, really, to the experiences of the other saints. They can more or less, it's almost, you know, the same experience. Then we have the Bible verses on hell. If you want to later, like, take the Bible there and read some of them, you know, there's in Luke 16:23, talks about the. Does I am tortured in this flame? Lazarus and the poor man, where he's condemned. Then there's Matthew 13:42. Jesus says, "And shall cast them into a furnace of fire. There shall be wailing and gnashing of teeth." Matthew 25:41. Jesus says, "Depart from me, ye cursed, into everlasting fire." And in Revelation 20:15 says, "And whosoever was not found written in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire." Now, there's a very interesting testimony on YouTube. I don't know if you've heard of Dr. Gloria Polo. Yeah. Have you heard anybody else? No. So only Donny has heard of her testimony. But basically her story is like in 1994, she's a qualified, a dentist, very academically, she's very, very intelligent woman, very competent. She's very good work. A Catholic. She was born and raised as Catholic. She left the practice as a young girl. She used to always have the habit of going to Mass even as a teenager, but out of, I guess, fear of hell and, maybe the demons. So it was kind of like, almost like, it was a very kind of superficial way of, dealing with her faith. Until one time she actually heard a priest saying, that all those things about demons and hell, that's not true. That just comes from a priest. So, you can just think this priest, where is his faith? He doesn't have faith. So, of course, that's very, a scandalous way, God have mercy on that priest's soul. But when this young girl, heard this priest saying this, she says, "Well, if that's true, if he's saying that, well, then, I'm going to quit Mass because, he must know his stuff." Well, the poor man didn't know his stuff. He had no faith. And so she stopped. And then, of course, with her colleagues in university, as it happens, it's very typical, the typical, we say things, this thing about God is all nonsense. And, we have to move on. We're in a scientific age and, all the rest. So she was kind of in all of that. And of course, she lived a very worldly life. She got married. She had kids and so on. She tells as well, in one moment in her life as a teenager, she had an abortion. But I guess a woman that was, according to the criteria of the world, not, a bad woman, but, into her career, and she had a family, and, basically God was out of the picture completely, So now I'm just going to read to you a paragraph because basically what happened to her is in 1994, she was struck by lightning and with her cousin, a young man, this teenager, he died instantly, but he was actually a very good Catholic. He was actually a very, very good boy. And you know, he died. You know, he was he went to heaven, like, you know, because of that accident. He was very united to the Lord. But in the case of Gloria, when she died, when she was struck by lightning, she was having she had an umbrella. It was raining heavily. There was thunder and lightning. She was going to the university to you know. And she was hopping over, like, you know, I guess puddles on the ground. When she was hopping over, when she the lightning came through the umbrella, went down through her hand, it severed, like, you know, inside of her, like several, and then it went out through her feet, or one foot. And so, like, she was basically out of it completely. Now, the miracle is that she actually returned to life, because, I mean, like, you know, she should have died. So she relates, like, her experience of, you know, what happened afterwards. And she says it like this: "My scientific and intellectual mind now did not help me at all. I went around in the room. I was trying to get back into my body, but this flesh of mine did not receive me, and the scare was terrible. I ended up fleeing as fast as I could. I passed through. I do not know how the wall of the operation room, hoping to be able to hide myself in the aisles of the hospital. But when I passed the wall down, I made a jump into emptiness. I headed downward several tunnels, which went down towards the bottom. At the beginning, there was still a little light, like beehives, in which there were so many people, young ones, old ones, men and women, who were crying, and with frightening screams, they were grinding their teeth. Ever more terrified, continued to descend, seeking to get out of there while the light was going away, diminishing. I carried on roaming in those tunnels in a frightening darkness until I arrived at an obscurity that cannot be compared to anything else. I can only say that in comparison, the darkest obscurity on earth is not even comparable to the full daylight at midday. Down there, the same obscurity generates pain, horror, shame, and stings terribly. It is a living obscurity. Yes, it is alive. There, the mind is dead or inert. At the end of my descent, running along all these tunnels, I arrived to a level place. I was frantic, with a will of iron to get out of there. The same will that I had to ascend in life, but now it did not help me at all, because there I was, and there I remained. At a certain point, I saw the ground open up, like a great mouth, enormous. It was alive, alive. I felt my body empty. Empty in a startling way, and under me an incredible, frightening abyss, horrible. That which chilled me to the most was that from there down, you did not feel even a little love of God, not even a little drop of hope. That chasm had something that sucked me into it. I cried out like a madwoman, terrorized, feeling the horror of not being able to avoid that descent, because I realized that I was irretrievably sliding inside. I knew that if I might enter, I would not at all have remained I would not at all have remained there, but I would have continued to descend without ever being able to come back up. It was this, the spiritual death of my soul. So basically, that's just part of her testament. She has, like, a lot of different experiences. She was obviously saved. She came back. Jesus spoke to her and told her to go and to relate her and tell her testimony, everywhere. So it's fascinating because, the reality is that, she was so badly damaged that it was actually miraculous that she actually is alive. But she tells her all of her testimony with great detail, and it's actually very, very good. And she's really very big into the prayer to mass, and she goes to different places, telling her testimony. When she tells her testimony, she's accompanied by four assistants. And in the four corners of the room, where she tells her testimony, those four assistants are continually praying the rosary in order to bring about, the conversion and the help of all people. Of course, Our Lady Fatima, one of the visions where Our Lady spoke to the children, and where the children experienced the vision of hell. Then we'd say the rays of light seemed to penetrate the earth. We saw, as it were, a sea of fire. Plunged in this fire were demons and souls in human form, like transparent burning embers, all blackened and burnished bronze, floating about in the conflagration, now raised into the air by the flames that issue from within themselves, together with the great clouds of smoke, now falling back on every side like sparks in huge fires. Without weight or equilibrium, amid shrieks and groans of pain and despair, which horrified us and made us tremble with fear. The demons could be distinguished by their terrifying and repellent likeness to frightful and unknown animals, black and transparent like burning coals. Terrified, as if to plead for succor, we looked up at Our Lady, who said to us so kindly and so sadly, "You have seen hell, where the souls of poor sinners go. To save them, God wishes to establish in the world devotion to my Immaculate Heart. If what I say to you is done, many souls will be saved, and there will be peace." So we can see here the consequences of of hell, this hell, which is a big a terrible and frightening reality. There's one story of Blessed Laura Vicuna. I don't know if you heard about her, but she's a young girl who was born in Argentina. And, she died in 1903, around that year. She was born into a poor family. Her father died in a war at that time. And so the mother had, with Laura and baby sister, she was in a desperate situation in order to make ends meet and to try and so she decided with her children to cross over the border into Chile. And when she crossed over there, she was trying to make a living, trying to look for a place or a job or something like that. So she met this guy called Manuel Moro. Manuel Moro was a rancher. He owned a lot of land, but he was a very, very bad, evil man. He caused a lot of trouble and suffering for many people. And so he fell in love with this woman, and they started living together. So Laura was the daughter of this woman. In the end, this man paid for Laura's education. She was a young girl. She went to the Salesians sisters for an education. She loved the boarding school there. She received an education. And As the years passed, Laura, as she was receiving the instruction and the faith, she realized that the soul of her mother was in grave danger of going to hell, being condemned. And so she was so frightened by that, she was kind of like really agitated and anxious. And so she decided to offer her life to God for the salvation of her mother. So she offered it several times. And then eventually the Lord accepted her prayer. She became very, very ill. She was admitted to hospital. But before that, she had suffered as well physically from, the abuse of this man that was living with her mother, because he was a very violent man, and he made advances on her, and he was just a very, very perverse person, and he beat her very badly at one stage. So she was in hospital. She was actually, very, very, very sick child. She was 12 years old, and then on her hospital bed, she revealed the secret to her mother. She says, "Mother," she says, "I have offered my life to God for the salvation of your soul. Would you please do me the favor to convert and to return to the faith?" And so she, her mother was very, she was very moved, obviously, by these words of her daughter. And she promised her daughter there, at that moment, that she would never go back to live with him. And so a few days later, Laura died, and she's now blessed. And we can see here it's a beautiful and powerful testimony of, say, a young girl that, say, offers herself to God for the salvation of the soul of her mother. And it's heroic, because basically, that and the child, she wasn't going anywhere. She was just basically suffering. But it's a tremendous testament of love and mercy. So we leave it there. The meditation on hell is basically now this time of prayer. We just have an hour here of prayer. Is bring to mind, the meditation that I've just given to you. Ask the Lord and the Holy Spirit to help you. Saint Ignatius talks about the importance of using the imagination in order to make present, the imagine the what hell is like. Well, the descriptions that we've just listened to, and also at the end of the meditation, just to enter into, we'd say, a conversation with God. First of all, thanking him for his great mercy, his great love that he has, that he has for your soul, and begging him too, that he may help you always to be to go on a path of his grace, of his holiness, that we may never offend him to any type of sin, especially in mortal sins. We ask Our Lady to help us with this meditation and to grow with in God's holy mercy. Amen.